Once a teacher works with a student as they change their life, right? As they build a life skill or as they achieve an academic goal that they didn't believe that they could, then teacher builds the efficacy that if I can do it with one student, I can do it with any.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I am your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations and to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. This week at Branching Minds, we're gearing up for our annual MTSS Virtual Summit, and we couldn't be more excited. One of this year's keynote speakers is Angie Plugge, a longtime district partner and a dedicated MTSS practitioner from Waverly, Nebraska. Today, I am thrilled to share a throwback episode featuring Angie, where she takes us through her MTSS journey and highlights the incredible work she's doing in Waverly. Her passion and commitment to making a difference continues to inspire me, and I hope it'll inspire you too. Well, today on the podcast, I am pleased to have as a guest Angie Plugge, the Director of Learning in Waverly School District in Nebraska. And she is just here to talk about her MTSS practice in the district, what they did right, what they did wrong, and all the things in between. And she's a delightful guest that we are just so excited to chat with. Angie, I know it's back to school time. How are you doing? How's you know, you can speak for everyone who's going back to school. Is it chaos? Is it fun? Is it exciting?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on the podcast. I love Branching Minds, and I also love talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly of MTSS. And yes, like everyone's getting ready to go back to school right now, and it can be a really hectic and stressful time. Because in education, we have these like beginnings and endings. And as we gear up, there's a lot of pressure to have just the right start. And I learned probably about, I think, 8 years ago, there isn't one thing that we're going to do that's going to make it like the best and the greatest. And there isn't one thing that we're going to do that is going to take down the school year. I'm feeling pretty calm about going into the school year in terms of we do a lot of work in the summer to just revisit and revise our systems that we have in place. And a lot of that is centered around MTSS. So I know that as a district, we have some great plans in place. Our schools have great plans in place. So really, it's about being excited about a new group of kids and another year for teachers. So I'm relaxed and excited at the same time.
I like that you said that there's not one thing that's going to make the best year ever or one thing that's going to break the year. Because I do think that that's right. There's so much pressure for the beginning part of the school year. And I always felt that as a teacher of like, okay, I have to have a really fantastic first day to entice the kids, make them excited about the year. But then we also had to do all those back to school rule going over and all the different other stuff, you know, that teachers have to do. And it's like, okay, how do I make that exciting? And I think even at the district level too, I'm sure that there's a different kind of pressure too in dealing with all the different parts.
You know, I really think it's important to start this school year, like connecting people to the purpose, like who are we and why are we here? And then like letting everyone know, like, here's what you can expect. And, you know, that's what I think is a real benefit of MTSS is it's those systems, right? It's your, like, when are we going to collaborate? What's our professional learning plan? Like, what are our areas of focus? But really, you have the entire year to let that play out. And so trying to squeeze it all into like one kickoff day or one day back, you know, like professional learning day before school starts, you know, it's not what we're thinking about. Mm. And so it's really like centering ourselves and keeping in mind, we've got 8 to 9 months to, you know, to play out this year and to work within our systems. resist that desire to like squeeze it all in.
Well, and I think that that's so important of setting up those structures and those routines and procedures as far as a system goes. I mean, that goes with a classroom level, building level, district mm-hmm. level, because I think when you set that all up at the beginning of the year, you're setting yourself up for success moving forward. And I think it just enables your teams to do more efficient and better work. So I know that you know a lot about MTSS. You're practicing it, you know, as an educator. Maybe describe for us a little bit about your journey with understanding MTSS and sort of like where you've arrived at today.
Definitely. I'm entering my 23rd year as a public educator. And I would say my journey with MTS started in the early 2000s when I became a middle school assistant principal at a Title I middle school in an urban district, the Lincoln Public Schools in Lincoln, Nebraska. We had about 900 students. And the year before I came, there had been 180 fights. And over 300 out of school suspensions. So we were definitely an inverted triangle when it came to behavior. We had a lot of behavior needs. And at the same time, that middle school was part of a Learning Forward national cohort where we were working. That was No Child Left Behind. And so we were working to hit those academic achievement goals by 2010, 2012. So we were talking a lot about tier two interventions. The word MTSS did not exist. RTI was something that elementary schools were doing, but I mean, this is secondary. So we had two big challenges. The first was like just managing data. In the early 2000s, you didn't have great access to data. We were still taking assessments, pencil, paper. And it seemed like there was a real intense focus on finding the right intervention. And that if all we did was find the right magic bullet, all of our problems would be solved. It took me a couple of maybe a year or two to realize like there is no magic bullet intervention. And that's just like statistically impossible, right? I mean, intervention time is such a small fraction of time compared to the amount of time that students spend in the classroom. So when I opened a new middle school, Title I middle school in 2011, we wanted it to be different. We wanted it to be a school that was different than what we'd worked on before. And so we started by, again, no words MTSS. So nobody like was using these words, but we knew, like we called it the ABCs. So we knew that we needed to address academics, we needed to address behavior, and we needed to address attendance of students. And we also knew that we had to have data points. Like we had to like, okay, what's our success criteria? What's our goal that we're working for to like let us know that what we're doing is working. And then we also wanted to make sure that we were identifying really who needed, like how big is this problem? So like we had started to address like the three areas separately. We had identified specific data points that we would use to monitor, and again, inverted triangles. And I mean, I just knew as a principal, there's no way we can create individual behavior plans for all these students. Like we don't have the time or the energy. So those first couple of years were really hard. We really invested in our core practices and we separated it in those three areas. We worked to build shared understanding, common core practices, and we were monitoring the impact of it. And then we came together as teams to problem solve. We had used the student assistance model where like this team of people that didn't really necessarily have the students, they were creating these plans for kids that they didn't have and they were giving them to teachers who weren't there when we were coming up with the plans. Mm-hmm. And so we did problem solving is what we called it, with the teachers who had the students. And of course, the hypothesis was if we do that, then those strategies will be generalized into core for all kids. And they were. So we just had a lot of success and it was really exciting. And so when I transitioned to a central office role, I took what I knew from implementing those structures. Mm-hmm. And now my role is supporting schools in developing and implementing those on their own in their buildings. And every building's unique. I mean, even as a district, you know, we have a framework that we use. I fully am aware that every building has unique needs. They're teaching different levels of content. And so how they put those pieces together in their building is going to look different. Yeah. And so that's kind of that's an abbreviated version of my journey with MTSS. And I'm still learning. Like I learn every year.
Well, and I always feel like I've said this before on the podcast, so there's like a continuum, right? Like, you know, you have your learning, and I feel like the continuum goes on, right? Because even if we can have some kind of expertise, I feel like there's always more to learn. And every group of kids is different. I mean, I think that's the secret in education too, is like every year your group of students mm-hmm. is different. The makeup is different. You know, nothing ever stays the same because kids are like kind of a product of this changing world, you know, like the problems we have today are unique to today. And so sometimes in that, it forces us to also keep learning and be creative in how we help solve, because that sounds a little bit of what you had to do, is be creative in solving issues and struggles of the students you had in front of you. And so really looking at what's the best way. And the thing I love about MTSS is that continuous improvement, right? It's you're always coming back to the data and the problem solving and trying something new and then seeing the results and then like, oh, we got to tweak this a little bit. And I think that really forces educators to like, you know, we have to continue to learn and continue to try to just do a little bit better every time. So I appreciate you sharing. That's a great, I loved hearing that experience. So when you started this kind of role in the central office, what do you feel like, did your feelings about how MTSS was implemented changed for like in a different way? Or like, did your perspective about it change in some way?
A lot. So when I transitioned to this role nationally, at a state level, even at a local level, we started using the words MTSS. And to be honest with you, that I hesitated and it made me nervous, because anytime we assign a new title to something and we introduce it into the education world, there's two things that I worry about. One is that people are going to see this as an isolated thing. Like, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, like this is separate. Now we have this thing called MTSS mm-hmm. and I have to then, how does that fit into my schema? And like, oh my gosh, this is a whole nother thing. And so, and when you go into a new context, you don't know how everything operates. And so, and at the same time, I was still developing my formal understanding of the MTSS framework. I knew what I knew from experience, right? But there was a lot more to it. So those were like two of my, like, okay, this is what I'm struggling to do. And then I would say, as a director, a big thing that has happened is I needed to understand how MTSS worked with continuous improvement and how it worked within the existing core practices and systems of mm-hmm. public education, because I think that's important. Like, people have to build that like metacognitive understanding of this isn't new and it's not isolated. This is how it fits into what we do in public education and as public educators. So for the last 4 years, I've been really working to develop people's conceptual understanding so then they can engage in it practically of mm-hmm. how those practices and systems work together.
Well, I appreciate that you said that, because I do think that there is, you know, when you introduce something new, it's the whole, oh, it's just another thing. It's just mm-hmm. a whole, it's old things repackaged in a new way. And I think that there is a lot of reason for educators to be skeptical of things when it's something new.
I do too. And I, at one point, I thought it was the same thing as continuous improvement. Like I was like, oh, this is just continuous improvement. And now I don't. And I do, I support leaders and I support schools, and they are interdependent of each other, but they are still like two separate things. We use the continuous improvement process within that MTSS structure.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I always think it kind of just marries a lot of things together and provides an umbrella over all of the different practices a school district is already doing. It kind of like provides a structure for how things can work together. Cause I think the struggle is when things are done in the siloed way and they don't actually talk to each other or are interdependent, then that's when I don't think the progress is as powerful or like, you know, it, you don't move as quickly to make things happen. Cause you, when behavior and academics and social, emotional, when all of that is together, then you can really see the progress. Cause often academics is a result of other things, or the behavior is the result of maybe the struggle in academics. Like it's, we're not, you know, we aren't, you know, different category of person, compartmentalized people. Like we are very integrated people, I think, in general. So I like to think about it that way. So in all the work that you do, I always love asking this question of educators, because I think for me, it's the stories of students that really compel the work forward. Is there, can you think of a group of students, or even just in the last few years, a student that comes to mind and like the power that MTSS can have when applied in the correct way?
I have countless stories from the middle school that I led for 8 years, specifically in terms of, and you talked about how behavior impacts academic performance, and they're amazing stories. And the part that I think that when you think about those students, it's also what those stories do to the efficacy of the teachers that worked with them. You know, once a teacher works with a student, as they change their life, right? As they build a life skill, or as they achieve an academic goal that they didn't believe that they could. And then the teacher builds the efficacy that if I can do it with one student, I can do it with any. Most recently though, and I want to speak more to, I don't work with individual students at a director level. I still though do work with teachers and students regularly. And I think that's important for whether you're a school leader or a district leader, is spending time listening and watching when teams are talking about being stuck or when a student is being stuck. So a couple of years ago, I was working with one of our elementary reading interventionists, and this is an adult story too. So when we first started with ELA and our focus, less than 50% of our students were meeting our state standards in reading. And we are a district where that shouldn't be happening. I mean, we have 16% of our students are free and reduced. Our mobility rate is below 3%. We meet the state average in IEPs. We have no English language learners. And so we have a demographic of students that you would be like, what's going on here? So when we first started to implement our new curriculum, and the interventionists have it the hardest, because, you know, everyone expects the interventionist to fix the problem. And so that first year, there was emotion. I mean, just overwhelming of, I can't do this. I mean, actually, she said that to me, like, I can't do this. And I said in my head, I thought by the end of the year, we're going to be celebrating. And so I dug in and we were working together to really think about like our intervention that we were giving with students. We used data to really identify what specific skills that they needed to work as first graders. So which sound patterns, and we targeted just one at a time. We used our formative assessment, and by the end of the year, those students had met the grade level benchmark and we were celebrating, and it was great. So the next year she calls me because she has a group of kindergartners, and she's really confident now in her practice. And she has a group of kindergartners, and we were just not making progress with phonemic awareness. And she said, can you come on in and watch the group? And so I said, yes. And so she was monitoring the data, doing a great job administering the intervention as we as we had said. And when I watched the group, I realized, like, one, the group was way too big. I mean, we had six kids who weren't making progress. And even though they were in there for 25 minutes, for kindergartners, that's a long time, they weren't getting enough reps, like, as individual mm-hmm. students. And I was watching, and it was very apparent to me that some of them were doing a great job of then repeating what they were hearing from other group members. And so that was the first thing that we did was, hey, let's make this smaller. Let's make smaller groups. And then I don't know for whatever, I mean, again, we're learning too. So I was digging into phonemic awareness more, and we were doing letter training. And so we said, let's give them a diagnostic assessment. And we realized that the students really needed to work on their phonological skills. And so we took a risk. We said, you know what, let's shorten the intervention time. Let's go to 7 minutes, but have one or two students per group. She has a phonemic awareness wagon that she takes down to kindergarten so we can transition and serve more students, really targeting though the skill that they need to work on rather than trying to do. Hegarty's a great intervention for the core, or a great strategy for the core, but it's going through multiple different skills with phonological and phonemic awareness. And so we really zeroed in. And by the end of the year, out of that group of six, there were only two that had not met the benchmark. The reason why I tell that story, one, there is a student who at the end of first grade, he has met the phonemic awareness benchmark and has gotten really close because we've continued to do this work with that individual student. The other really powerful part of that story is, though, that we were able to use what we learned with the interventionists in that group, and we applied it to all of our other elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And we were able to not only share the data, but we shared the student stories. And, you know, and so there is power in stories with MTSS. And for me, it's as much individual students as it is when I'm working with teachers and seeing how it impacts their efficacy and their practice.
Well, that's really powerful, thinking about how, because of that problem solving that happens with one teacher and like the work that you do, how that can impact the team and even and further on. And I think that's important to remember, because I think we often as educators think, you know, oh, it's about just impacting my learning and my practice. But sometimes it is about beyond that and how what you learn can impact your team and change the core practice and change the, you know, the school and the district. Because oftentimes, maybe when we don't know those things until we ask for help and have someone else come observe, I thought that was a really powerful part of the story too, is just having like getting your eyes on the problem, right? And understanding of like, what does that look like in action? Is there something the teacher or the interventionist doesn't see versus someone else, you know, being able to problem solve with them? So that's a really, I love that you do that and you are very hands-on in your practice, but thank you for sharing that. And just even the fact of her, you know, willingness to try something different and try something new. And you say like, take a risk, but in the way of just like, you just did the part of what it means to sort of the science of teaching that takes the hypothesis and put something into practice. And so thank you. So I think that there's so much that we could talk about with MTSS. For you in your work, what do you think is something that others should know about the work around MTSS and even just in a school district?
I have a couple of things that I think are important. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there is a lot.
There's not enough time on this podcast.
No, there is not. And so I always try to be responsive to hearing like where somebody is at and what they're doing. But overall, in general, this is what's driving my work right now. And this is what I'm reinforcing to schools who I'm gradually releasing to like really own this process on their own. So the first is, we use a really straightforward definition that MTSS is monitoring the impact of core instruction or core practices and identifying students who need additional support, right? And that's what it is. We are monitoring the impact of our core practices and identifying students who need additional support. So that's very straightforward and simple when you think about it. And I'm going to recognize there are a ton of steps. There really are. So first you have to prioritize. It's really hard. We talked about the interdependence of behavior, attendance, and academics, but you do have to prioritize. And I see teams get paralyzed because it's difficult to make the decision of where do we start. And so you have to identify an area where you really want to start. For us, when I came to Waverly, it was ELA. That was our greatest need. And so we prioritized that. So where are you going to start? Because you really want to focus and support people. The second thing is be reasonable. I love that saying. Like, I've been saying that a lot lately. Like, let's be reasonable. I try to do a million things. I always do. I've really had to think about, I want things to stick. I want to build capacity for real and sustainable capacity. So we have to be reasonable. So that means slowing down and establishing a reasonable scope and sequence for implementation. I referred to this at the beginning when I was talking about getting ready at the beginning of the school year. We try to cram way too much into the beginning of the school year. And so we've worked to build time into our calendar, our district calendar, for shared learning through professional learning, days to work on continuous improvement. And we've spaced that out throughout the year. And we've even built the agendas out. And it's an adult scope and sequence. So come up with an MTSS scope and sequence for your district that focuses on that simple purpose, which is we're monitoring the impact of core practices and identifying students who need additional support. Scope and sequence it out, just like you would a curriculum pacing guide, to reassure people. We built this time in, you don't have to worry about all that other stuff. The third thing that goes along with that is use gradual release as a leader. I did this. Like, I was noticing that I thought I'd come up with these great MTSS handbooks with great slides that I was sharing with all the schools. And guess what? The practice wasn't transferring. And so I'm fortunate. I work in a mid-sized district. And so I said, I'm going to model this. So I spent the whole last year modeling 4K5 monthly MTSS meetings with grade level teams. Well, it was huge. I was giving them direct instruction. Also, though, I was right there. I was able to formatively assess, like, okay, where are different teams at? What are areas that we need to reinforce? And so this year, I'm gradually releasing to them. They are going to lead their own meetings. I'm still going to be there. I'm provided like guided practice. I'm going to do consultation and feedback, but I really think that to get it going, sometimes that does require gradual release, just like in your classroom. And then another one is data analysis is not intuitive, no matter how much we want that to be true. I was a biochem major, you know, and so to me, it is very intuitive. With my work, I have noticed that there's a lot of variability in people's ability to analyze data. So I facilitate. And when done correctly, I truly do think data can be transformational, because when you connect the student outcome to the teacher action, that leads to collective efficacy. And so you're not going to get that sustained capacity without data analysis, and you are going to have to provide scaffolds and supports that. And so then that's my final piece, is that when you connect that teacher work to outcomes, you have to build in reflection as well. And so part of our MTSS meetings are also reflecting on, like, what did we learn about our practice? What did we learn about our students? And then, you know, what are we going to do next year? So I think that's another really important thing about MTSS.
There you go. There's a masterclass. But I know, I appreciate what you said about the gradual release and just like the facilitating, being there to facilitate in some capacities and do the direct instruction, but kind of slowly release teams. Cause, and I'm sure that there's probably teams that got there quicker than maybe other teams did. The other piece that you mentioned about data analysis not being intuitive, I think that that is something we don't really talk about a lot, because I think that there's an assumption that you know, most teachers are really naturally good at that. And I think that there is a piece where some of that work has to be in learning. Some of us are maybe, you know, naturally able to look at data and draw the conclusions. But I also think we all bring our own experiences and understandings about the data to the practice. I mean, I can think as a newer teacher, we would sit in front of a data and I would just be very defensive of my data, mm-hmm. you know, and not being able to like look at it objectively. And like, what I was bringing into the room was just fear that I was going to be fired. So like, I think that that's something to think about, is when examining that data of like, what does everybody bring into the room? And are we able to look at it objectively and be able to like, you know, make plans and goals from that without being, you know, putting our own feelings and emotions into it? So,
well, that's a culture thing. I mean, you have to be vulnerable to collaborate and to look at data. And so, I mean, that's a whole nother component that is about like building culture within your teams and trust.
Angie, there is so much more that I want to talk to you about that time will not allow, but I wanted to ask this because I love asking kind of a fun question at the end of a conversation. For you, what is your favorite part of, and you worked in middle school too, so I'm sure that you have lots of great stories, but what's your favorite part of working with students?
I love working with people, right? Especially students, because it's all about helping people meet their fullest potential. Like, I'm about growth. As a principal, I loved working with students when they were stuck, right? Same with teachers. Like, they're stuck and they don't think they can do it, or they don't have the skills to problem solve. And I loved processing with students the same way I love processing with teachers. And it's not telling them what to do, because that doesn't work, right? I love like giving people questions that they can reflect on to really start to like understand themselves, and then continue to work with them and to be there at the end, like to like, did this, look at what you did, and to celebrate and cheer them on. So really just understanding, and like with students too, they give us such insight, right? Like when you watch a student or talk to a student, they give you what you need to know to be able to do the best job that we can to serve them. So,
yeah, I love that. I think that that's the best part. Well, one of the hardest parts about middle school is you don't get to see necessarily the end result like of them in high school and different stuff. Because my favorite part was going to high school graduation of the middle schoolers that I had, but you do get to see that from beginning to the end of the year. And it's always good to sort of reflect on how far that they come. And so I appreciate that you said that. So thank you so much for chatting about MTSS and just your work and sharing with us just a little bit about Waverly. So we appreciate you being here. Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcasts on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.